This is the Skies Blue Podcast.
Excited? I'm excited. Daryl Carpenter's excited. Paul Fisher's excited. I'm not sure about Stuart, but he'd be too excited because Stuart is really excited. Because, you know, this could be the season. I know you say that every year, but we really feel this could be the season. It could be the season that Paul Cook takes Chesterfield back into the Football League, from which they've been missing since 2018. Paul, the bookies have got Chesterfield down as ridiculous favourites, 5-2 for the championship. 19-10 is the best odds for promotion. That says an awful lot, particularly seeing as the next best odds are for Oldham Athletic, 9-1 for the championship. So Chesterfield, easy way out favourites. Is it as simple as that, Paul?
Well, I mean, I'd love it to be as simple as that. You know, bookies are rarely wrong, though, aren't they? So, I think that the odds being so short on Chesterfield does perhaps say that the competition is not as strong as last year. Obviously, that Wrexham and Notts County have gone. But, you know, it's not going to be a walk in the park, is it? Chesterfield never make it easy on themselves. So you need to give that little bit of length out. I'm surprised the bookies have gone that short. You know, it's seeing how do the bookies know a lot about the National League? I'm not too sure, but knowing that York have got, you know, building a really good squad there. Oldham, I'm not sure. I think Oldham might be a sort of there or thereabouts, but not in the same caliber of York. I don't know. I've got my design saying that York's going to be more the threat to Chesterfield.
Well, funnily enough, I saw a pie chart, Paul, that said that most individual bets have gone on York City.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the most money, but most individual bets have gone on York City. They've signed 16 players. That might be too many. That might be a bridge too far. And when you look down them, there's quite a few that are relatively young. There's quite a few from lower divisions. And there's a couple from Scotland who are always, you never quite know how it's going to be. Callum Howe, centre-half from Solihull, is probably the one that you can predict the most. But they've got the wonderfully named Depo Akinyemi, who was Ayr's top scorer last season. Mm. They've got a 6'6" fella called Kevin Joshua from Peterhead. Who knows how they're going to go. But Stuart, signing 16 players in one fell swoop. I know they've got new ownership and they've got a few quid to throw at it, but it'll take until about November to learn each other's names, won't it?
Well, absolutely. I was 16 all in one go. You'd think James Rowe would be looking on enviously, wouldn't you? It is a lot, isn't it? As you say, they've all got to get to know each other and learn how to play as a team. But only 11 of them are going to have a go at any one time, aren't they? So five people signed who straight away are going to be sat on the bench or stuck in the reserves or something. It's a lot of players. And I suppose they may not all be eyes on the first team straight away. There might be, you know, some young lads in there that have a developmental kind of brief about them, I suppose. But it is a lot, isn't it? You look more for the clubs that have signed fewer players because they've got well-developed squads already, like, dare I say, ourselves, like Woking, for instance, haven't done a fantastic quantity of business in the transfer market this summer, but some of the quality...
We're up to nine now. Woking are up to nine.
Are they? Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Have they been signing more today?
Let's give Joe Dart credit here, because he's got a wonderful Twitter with a list of everybody's signings. So thanks for that, Joe. I know he'll be listening to the podcast. But Woking have signed some quality. They've got Greg Taylor was at Cambridge last season. Robbie Wilmot, who was at Newport. They've got Manny Oyelecca, of course, and if you can keep him fit, he's a great addition. Denon Lewis is going to build some speed in it. And Charlie Wakefield, who's been around this division for... He's not our Charlie Wakefield.
No, not that one.
Yeah.
Not that one. But he's been around for a while. So, yeah, they've got some quality signings. Looking at York, despite the fact that they've had a lot of individual bets, you can still get 18-1 for the title for York. So the bookies have looked and not felt there's been that much quality. Woking are 14-1. It's Chesterfield favourites, then Oldham, then Hartlepool, then Rochdale, Woking, Dagenham and Redbridge are the next group. York and then Barnet. And then one team, I think, who signed some good quality players are at 20-1. Daryl, that's Eastleigh. If you look at who they've signed, they've signed Jake Taylor from Stevenage, Paul McCallum, of course, Enzio Baldivine, who was ex-Notts County, was at Sutton last season, Ryan Clampin from Colchester, Lee Hodson from Kilmarnock, Aidan Barlow from Doncaster Rovers, Scott Quigley, who's got up in this league twice in the last few years, ex-Barrow and Stockport, Chris Maguire from Ayr, the lad who had a little bit of a ban for betting when he was at Lincoln. And the most intriguing signing that I've noticed, Ludwig Francilet, a 6'5", former Crawley and Newcastle United Academy player. So, for some reason, they've got some quality, Daz, but the bookies have not really noticed them.
No, they're in my kind of second tier of who I think might spring a surprise. They've got a decent manager, haven't they? Is it Bradbury?
Yeah.
He's the manager who knows this level. He obviously got them on quite a decent run back end of last season. They just missed out on the playoffs, didn't they? In fact, they gave us all we could handle with a few games to go, didn't they, when we had the famous comeback from 2-0 down. I don't think they'll be far away. 6th to 10th would be my guess, and we're in that area. I don't think they'll be pressing for the top four. I'd be surprised. I suspect York might be a bit of smoke and mirrors. So it'll be interesting to see how they bring all these newcomers together. It's never easy. We've had it a time or two, haven't we, where we brought in sort of 10, 12 bodies, and getting a pattern and a team shape and an ethos across to players, you know, and getting some team spirits to things when you've got a disparate group of people that many of which won't know one another. And then all the lads that were left, presumably, will have had their nose to a degree put out of joint as well. So it's a difficult balancing act. I don't know their manager. Anybody know anything about their manager? Michael Morton? He's not a name with which I'm familiar at York. So,
well, he was assistant to David Webb. Not that one.
The other one. Yeah.
That one.
And then he took over when Webb had two bouts of COVID, I think, which was he really suffered from. I like the cut of their jib when they came to our place on Good Friday.
Yeah.
I thought they gave us a real, real talking to on that day.
Yeah.
Helped by some mistakes from us, granted. But, you know, I fancied them more than Oldham because we absolutely battered Oldham on the day. So, lost, you know.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
But I thought he did really well to keep them up, knowing that what's going off in the background with the takeover and everything.
Yeah.
I think he did a really good job. So that's why they're my kind of tip for second.
Yeah. And I think one of the others that I think might spring a surprise is Dorking. They're changing from pure part-time to sort of a hybrid model. They're doing morning training 4 days a week or something and all that kind of stuff. And their track record over the last 20-odd years, as we know, is fairly spectacular. That, you know, they move into a division. If they don't go straight through it, they consolidate and move up the second year. So I wouldn't put anything past them. So I've got them down as a potential dark horse. So I think it'll be the usual suspects. Other than that, the Bromleys and Boreham Woods and Woking will be there or thereabouts again, I suspect. And then, of course, you've got Oldham and Hartlepool. You're not, certainly with Hartlepool, I don't think you're quite sure what you're going to get.
Hartlepool haven't got a popular ownership, have they?
Yeah.
And you always need everything to be right. And, of course, they got Dave Challoner.
Yes.
They went up a year or two ago, and he proved that he was no fluke when he went to Stockport and took them from the depths of 17th, 18th position in autumn to walking away with it in the end. But, you know, Oldham's most notable signing for a variety of reasons is Charlie Raglan, of course, former Spireite, who was at Cheltenham. And if you look at the rest of the signings, it's not necessarily something that... if that had happened at Chesterfield, there wouldn't have been an awful lot of over enthusiasm, I don't think.
How many signings have they had since January, Phil? Since Unsworth took over, how many signings have they had since January?
Well, they had a lot back in the last season, didn't they?
Yeah.
But in the summer they've signed six. I'll just give you a quick list of them. I'll just put it up. It's in alphabetical order. This Josh Lundstrom, who was at Altrincham last, Kurt Willoughby, Dan Ward, Sean Hobson, who will have come from Southend, and Charlie Raglan. So decent signings, no question about it. But for a team that most of us felt were going to be absolutely number one competition, they're perhaps not signed as much quality as we thought, but they did finish last season well, so they've got a good base, no question about that. Boreham Wood, they've signed Tom Whelan, who doesn't, to me, seem to be a Boreham Wood sort of style player, so whether they're going to try and play a bit more football. But they signed Angelo Balanta as well, who's another non-Boreham Wood type player, but I think he's a great player.
Yeah. They've lost George Broadhead, haven't they? He's joined Doncaster. From when he was on loan from the Blades last year. So he was sort of, him and Zach Brunt were their two sort of holders, weren't they? And they've lost them both, haven't they?
Yeah, Zach Brunt's gone to Barnet, along with Sam Barrett, who was a tormentor at Maidenhead, but has had a lot of injuries in the last year or two. And Rhys Hall Johnson's gone to Barnet as well, at Wrexham. So Hartlepool's main signing is Kieran Wallace, who they signed from Mansfield Town. Dagenham have signed some decent players. Tom Eastman, Frankie Vincent from Notts, Jake Hessenthaler, who knows his way around the football pitch. But have any of the signings been the quality of Wilgrig and Tom Naylor anywhere, Paul?
No, I don't think they have. I don't think they're buying. You know, the rest of the National League are buying players from the Championship or League One, are they? So, you know, they're kind of buying players who are, you know, like we've mentioned before, the sort of Scottish lower league clubs or investing in sort of youngsters. So it says that they're sort of on the development side of things, aren't they? I know that Boreham Wood lost a lot of players in the back end. I think you mentioned that was going to be the swan song, wasn't it, the Notts County game. So they've kind of brought in some established players, as you mentioned, with Balanta and Whelan, but also trying to find little nuggets there. So I think Boreham Wood might be a threat, but I don't think they'll be as good as the last couple of years. So I don't see any side really bringing in too many sort of stars, if you will, you know, for the National League, you know, as Grigg and Naylor have been. Even bringing Tyra in for Chesterfield, you know, is a key thing, because you don't sign many players from Premier League clubs, do you?
But the truth is with Tyra, Daz, if we'd have seen that on somebody else's, that name on somebody else's list, we'd have ignored it, because we don't know who he is. We only know he had a great season at Chester because his name was linked and we all had a look. So really, Daz, you know, he wouldn't ruffle any feathers anywhere else when they're looking at Chesterfield signings.
No, quite. It's always interesting with these young goalkeepers in particular, because I always think goalkeeping at that level is, if you're big enough, you've obviously got a decent set of hands. Can you use your feet, and what's your decision making like? And young goalkeepers make more mistakes, but they're also extremely agile. So I think you've just got to balance the two out, really. I've liked the look of him pre-season. I know he made the error against Derby, but he sure made up for it, didn't he? And his reaction to making good saves, I love it when goalkeepers celebrate a save like they've scored a goal, because, you know, when you punch in the air, when you push something away, I think that's really good to see, because he clearly cares about what he's doing and likes a clean sheet. So I think the signs are good with him. He's a good size too, isn't he? You know, he's I'm sure he'll cope with the rough and tumble of the National League okay. So he looks quite an exciting prospect.
So we've spent a bit of time looking at new signings and our main rivals, but Stuart, I'll ask you the final question, and it's a simple one word: Southend.
My goodness, you don't know from day to day, do you? You know, I mean, I can't personally see them having somebody come in and take it over, because what's the chairman? At the moment, the owner's selling. All he's selling is the name on a piece of paper at company's house, isn't he? He's not
very
clear. But you're also buying all the debt and all this, that, and the other. They're not getting the ground or any of that, you know. So, as an investor, really, what you've got to be is a fan with a truckload of money that doesn't mind losing it. You know, you're not going to get anybody who's, as far as I can see, who's interested in building anything, because there's nothing there to build if you don't get the stadium and all of that. Will they do anything this season? Again, my kind of opinion on that changes from day to day, depending upon how close they are. You know, I mean, they paid all the administrative staff today, apparently, didn't they? 3 months' wages. But as somebody on my Twitter feed or X feed or whatever it is now, observed that there's another payday in a few days' time. So, you know, does the cycle start all over again? It's absolute carnage if you're a Southend fan. And it's horrible. We've been in similar situations ourselves. I'm sure every club has, you know.
And for me, Kevin Mayer was the manager of the season in the National League last season, because he has a crocker watched it last season, and he managed to get some pretty decent results. They were hanging on him, the coattails of the players, for an awful long time until the real pressure was on. And of course, they were under transfer embargo for the whole season. And everything. He did a fantastic job. But there comes a time when, as an employee, you've got to say enough is enough. And you know, at the moment, he's got 12 players or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are injured and no lawnmower.
There's another one left today, I think, gone to another club in the district. You know, it's so hard for their supporters, you know, who came up in reasonable numbers and were very, you know, good-natured about all of that and took well to our joining in their protest when we went down there last season. You know, you just hate to see it happen to other, but you don't mind beating teams fair and square 11 versus 11, you know, but when one team comes along and it's got one arm tied behind its back and both legs tied together, it's, you know, it's terrible.
Well, a few years ago before we were in this division, it was Hyde United ran out of money, didn't they? And they put all their youth team in and were being beaten. Zillions every week. So you don't want that level. It's interesting on Soccer Base, which of course is a element of Bet365's, but it's a good statistics page. They've got the odds on for all the matches on the opening day. Southend v Oldham's not got any odds on.
Haven't Southend had a television game pulled as
Yes,
well?
They have, yeah.
Yes.
Removed, yeah.
Good point. And looking at the opening day fixtures, Barnet v Hartlepool looks intriguing to me. I think they're two that will certainly be in the playoff mix, no question. Solihull and Eastleigh are two of those teams that they're coming together. As was pointed out a little while ago, they could be the sixth to tenth sort of team. Solihull have signed Matty Warburton, who I think is a great player, and Josh Labadie. So Ollie Banks better watch his watch his bits of body. There might be some biting.
Give him a gum shield
going on.
Yeah,
gum shield on.
I think he's been injured in his first game, so he might be out for a while.
All right.
And then there's one of the fixtures that they always throw up, Rochdale against Ebbsfleet. So a team that was in the EFL and a team that was in the regional football last season. But yeah, I can remember the first match at Whitmore against Barnet. I can remember saying, well, Barnet will have no idea whether they're a good team or not, because I had about 8 or 9 people making the debuts. And so people don't know. You know, they assume they're 24 teams or 23 teams will be assuming they're good. And sometimes you don't know until game 5 or 6 if you're good or not. But Chesterfield have done pretty well in pre-season, Stuart. That record 9-0 win over Matlock, the best we've done against Alfreton, that 5-1 win. People were saying it's only Matlock, it's only Alfreton. Well, yeah, Matlock were only 2 levels below and playoff last season. Alfreton were 1 level below and playoffs last season. So if you look upwards in the same way, Matlock are the opposite of League One. Aren't they? So, you know, those two were pretty exciting, and it was, with respect, only Matlock and Alfreton, but you've still got to go out and beat them, and we've never done that before.
Absolutely. You know, if you create 9 chances in a game, well, you score 9 goals in a game, it's because you created at least 9 chances and there's been somebody there to put them away. You know, what more do you want? You know, if we made 15 chances against Matlock, put 9 of them away. If we'd have made 15 chances and only put 1 of them away, you know, you've got to go out and beat these teams, yes, as you say. And against that, you can balance the performances against the better teams that we've played, which have all been very creditable, I think, very good performances. You know, none of the teams that we've played have run away with it like we did against Matlock or against Alfreton. You know, and they are 2 divisions or 1 division, but 2 or 3, 4 divisions in some cases above us, you know. And we've actually kind of held our own and gave all of them a good game, you know. I mean, to go to Accrington, who, I know they're putting new players in and all that, and they're a week after us, so they're probably still
experimenting. No, at the same time, I think.
Are they?
Did they start? Day, yeah,
Premier League. Well, you'd expect them to be in the same state of readiness as we are. Yeah. But we look as though we could stroll out tomorrow and play the first game of the season, don't we? You know, we're not really experimenting anymore. We're just getting minutes in everyone's legs now, you know, and rotating this team, you know. And I suppose Bristol Rovers will start with more or less with the team that he wants to start the league game with. But yeah, we've done well in all the pre-season friendlies. You know, we deserve a lot of credit for how we've arranged them, how we've set them up, you know, the order that we've played them in and all of that. You know, it's been a really well-planned and well-executed pre-season, I think.
Well, I'm not quite sure how planned the Drew Talbot testimonial match against Sheffield Wednesday. We just bagged a date.
Well, no, but then as soon as that was arranged, that didn't become a traditional testimonial game.
Very much so.
Regulation pre-season friendly, and you know.
And Paul, the only time that we've looked second best in all of the games was when Ilman and Jai and Ollie McBurney came on for Sheffield United in that first 20 minutes, because they were fantastic, weren't they?
Yes, they're very good. They stood out, didn't they, really? They, you know, if you want that extra bit of gear, I think that Sheffield United really showed that they are a class above, aren't they, really? I think it kind of showed when they're bringing on their what do they nickname him, 60 million Illion, don't they? So they think that's how much he's worth. So, and of course, again, he's playing for them, but there's a chance that he might move to Marseille. So that's the kind of standard that he is. And Ollie McBurney's been and done it, hasn't he, in the Premier League, in the Championship before. You know, he's not a natural regular goal scorer, but he's a real handful, isn't he? And you could see the 2 goals, how quickly Sheffield United capitalised on just a nano error from our defence. And how quickly they broke through, and you know, you just saw that, and that, you know, wow, you know, that's a wonderful level, and if ever Chesterfield can get to that level, it'll be amazing, won't it? So, but yeah, that's the only real one. But apart from that, you know, when they brought, was it last 20 minutes? Saw clips of it. Chesterfield really competed when they had their sort of first team out, if you know what I mean.
And as we talked about that, the Alfreton and the Matlock and progress with that. Well, Chesterfield have only ever twice played a team four divisions above them, because of course they've got to be in the National League to play a team four divisions. Chelsea lost 5-1. Sheffield United in a pre-season friendly in 2019 lost 5-0. So 2-0 is an improvement in a slightly different way. But, you know, it's been five every time, Daz, before.
Yeah, no, I think we've equipped ourselves really well. I mean, there was a lot of nonsense on message boards, Facebook, wherever, saying, oh, we haven't scored any goals for three games, you know, woe is me, kind of rubbish. I mean, you've got to understand you're up against players who are quicker, faster, fitter, stronger, you know, better. Yeah, in almost every way. So what I liked was the fact that, you know, we seem to have balance in both 11s. I think there was an appreciable turnaround in that Sheffield United game after, you say, that first 15 minutes of the second half. They'd obviously chucked on their heavy hitters, but when we chucked ours on, we were back to parity again, which was really quite encouraging. So, I can't think, touch wood, I know we've a game to go on another week and a half's training, but I can't think we've had a pre-season with less drama. If Cookie could have scripted where we are as of today, 10 or 12 days before the start of the season, I'm sure he'd be ticking every box kind of thing. So it's been really encouraging in lots of ways. And a lot of our fringe players, I think, have shone too. You know, the likes of Shackleford again's been really good when he's played his halves and hours and things. I thought Horton looks better defensively than he did at any time last season. So, you know, hopefully he's been working on that. As we were saying earlier, the keeper looks encouraging. My only worry with the squad maintained what it was when we were sat outside doing al fresco last time. I just think we're light up front, and God forbid something happens to Grigg, I think we're a body light up top. But what they have done, of course, by not getting Dallas, is whatever we were going to offer Dallas presumably sat there in a war chest waiting to be used if necessary.
And I think Paul Cook has probably got surprising, you know, probably quite a bit more in his armoury than a lot of people think. Mm-hmm. You know, he was telling me off air, as it were, that with the likes of Oyelecki, who was on a few bob, gone, that you know, the overall spend he's still got quite a bit to go at.
Right. Well, that's encouraging, isn't it? And the other thing is that we tend to forget, but a lot of football league clubs will be finalising squads in this next week or so. Some will be tweaking right up to the end of August, won't they, when the window shuts. But we can just still go and buy players from the football league if we need them. We're not under that kind of constraint. So maybe he's waiting to see how squads turn out. Are there some young, really decent loanees? I mean, the kid that terrorised us in the first half of the Sheffield United game, Osawula, was it?
Danish lad, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he, God forbid we could get him on a season-long loan. And I'm not saying necessarily him, but there'll be players like him knocking about at Premier League and Championship teams who they want to get out and get some men's football. So maybe that's the way to go now, that whatever money we have got in the pot, we put towards a loan fee maybe and wages and bring somebody in. What I'd like somebody is with electric pace, just to give us something different.
I certainly think that the target areas are another striker, another attacking midfielder and a centre-half, I think, are probably the areas. And the second goalkeeper, whether Ryan Boot becomes the second goalkeeper or not, we'll soon find out. But, you know, people I've spoken to said, well, Ryan Boot's not going to want to be a number two, but potentially it could be Ryan Boot and Aritaria, our first proper duel since Richard O'Donnell and Tommy Lee.
Richard Tunning
realistically. No. And what happened when Richard O'Donnell and Tommy Lee were there? Oh yeah, we did quite well. Yeah, I think I remember. No question about it. Who, Stuart, has impressed you in pre-season, surprised you in pre-season a little bit? Because a lot of these players, we know what they're capable of, so we've not been surprised a great deal by Colclough or Dobra or whatever. But I tell you what, with Dobra, everybody, all the opposition fans I've seen have been impressed with him.
Well, indeed, they all know who he is now, don't they? No, with people like Colclough and Dobra, you can be impressed that they've come back and carried on as if they hadn't been away, you know. I don't know if anybody's actually surprised me. You get first look at Bailey Hobson, which is... you know, you get the impression that he's going to be a good player,
I think he was signed for one for the future. But I think the way he's played, he could be one for the present.
Yeah. And you're sort of reassured when you see people like Tom Naylor playing. You know, because you know the manager's had a lot of faith in him, and he obviously hasn't come here for threepence a week. And you know, it looks like we've got quality there. You know. So I don't think there's anything that's especially surprised me in terms of what I've seen from any players. But, you know, just as Daz says, with the fringe players coming in and just picking up the baton when the rotation has happened, you know, and everybody just seems to be in the right place, you know, and of the right frame of mind, I think. You know, it is a sort of wider kind of sense I get from what I've seen. And the general kind of overall picture is impressive.
Yeah, and what a balance. You can write down your 22 players in two 11s. They are two 11s, aren't they? You know, I've sort of got written down in one form. Tyra and second goalkeeper, well, that's Chadwick or Boot, goalkeeper. King or Shackleford, Palmer or Williams, Grimes or Maguire, Clements or Horton, Naylor or Jones, Banks or Oldacre, Mandeville or Curtis, Dobra or Hobson, Colclough or Ukegbulam, Grigg or Quigley. They're all direct covers. And yes, whilst you might lack experience with one or two of those guys, Ukegbulam, Hobson, in the attacking midfield area, which is, I think, why Paul Cook perhaps looking at that area, and that's why Callum Ainley was on trial at Accrington, 250 games or whatever, Crewe Alexander. So you know, there's obviously something about him there. So it's really balanced, Paul. I think it's the most balanced we've gone into a season with any squad for a long time.
Yeah, there is. I mean, he's sort of done it throughout preseason, hasn't he? He's sort of selected a 45 and the second 45, and it's not necessarily been a nailed on first 11. There's been sort of nine players you think, well, that's quite, but there's been guesswork at right back level, you could say, you know, where Shackleford's done arguably nothing wrong really in pre-season. You know, he's certainly matched Jeff King in my opinion. Debate at left back, you're absolutely right, Hobson and Clements have come out all guns blazing to try and nail down that position. So I mean, the only question, obviously, you can't really put Quigley up against Grigg in terms of the same player, because you'd have to play slightly differently, wouldn't you, for them? But you know, where Grigg is obviously the target, the box man, isn't he, you know, as a sense. So yeah, I mean, it's all about being competition players. He's always wanted a spare bloke, hasn't he, to go up against think the only issue obviously is the goalie as well. I mean, Luke Chadwick has been mentioned by Danny Webb on a couple of occasions that he's not quite ready for first 11 yet. He's not far away, but you know, you look back at him, he's only 19. I mean, he's massive, isn't he, for a 19-year-old? He's really tall. But you know, he could do with perhaps a spell, perhaps for the under 23s, a lot more games there, or even somewhere else, you know, locally, really, if he can get a game. So
he'll be playing men's football, won't he, in the Central Midlands Alliance next season with our youth team, inverted commas.
That's a very good point, Stuart. The youth team, youth second, the academy for whatever it's called, I think operated eight different teams in various things. They've dropped that down to four, but The most telling thing is you just said they've entered the men's league, the Central Midlands Alliance.
It's the old Central Midlands League combined with another one.
Yeah, so that'll bring people on, because Daz, the person that's surprised me in pre-season the most from a positive point of view is George Wilkinson, who when he wasn't on the team sheet at number 34 and he looked about 26, me and Jamie were thinking, who's that 34? He looked about 26. He looked experienced, and it was an 18-year-old George Wilkinson. So he's put this bit of full-time training, joining in with the big boys, has really seen him come forward in leaps and bounds.
And there's been some praise on Twitter for George Wilkinson, who got a little tweet from the club, because he's obviously been at the club since he was 10. But Billy Key, who he would have played with at Colville last year, just said, what a player. So that's a little nod in his feather in his that's cap good, there for yeah. George Wilkinson.
Yeah. No, he was very impressive. As you say, looked a boy in a man's body, which is always good to see. And I thought he had an excellent game last year against Colville. Put his goal aside, he was probably the best player on the pitch that day, because we weren't very good, but I thought he was outstanding. He looks a prospect, doesn't he? Obviously far too early yet. But yeah, certainly a prospect, and it's nice to see that we've signed the four lads, isn't it? With a view to actually getting some development path through from the academy, which is what, you know, what all supporters love. We like one of our own, don't we? And
I think we had to sign them, because, you know, we've had our fingers burnt with the other lad that's gone to Watford. So now there's nothing stopping, obviously, being poached and everything. But you've got to sign these players or put them on some sort of contract, because they're just going to walk. You know, it's not their fault. You know, the club needs to nail them down.
I see Solihull Moors today have announced the signing of 10 players from their academy team.
They
got a similar sort of setup to ours in academy terms. Yes, and they've just gone out and signed the whole lot, more or less. Yeah, just as you say, to be able to have some kind of control over them, as it were.
Yeah,
they're going to play. The thing is, they've got to play, and more importantly, they've got to play against men more often. So I've been to a couple of the youth setups pre-season games, and you know they do play pre-season games against men very often. But of course, when they're in under 18s, under 19s, under 21 leagues or whatever, they're playing against peers, aren't they? Not gnarled 35 year olds been there around and knows all the tricks, and they've done well. They've performed very, very well against much more experienced, perhaps not as fit and agile, but nevertheless people who know what to do with a football. Just so you know, listeners, we're recording this ahead of the Bristol Rovers game. It'll be coming out just after the Bristol Rovers game, so we can't talk about that, but we'll be coming back next to talk about Chesterfield's National League games during August. Well, a little bit of history, Stuart, coming up. Dorking Wanderers, the first match of this season at home. Dorking Wanderers was the first match of last season away from home. It's the first time in league format matches we've played the same team home and away in consecutive seasons for the first match since the early 60s, when Workington had that honour. Mm-hmm. We lost one and drew one and didn't score in either of them in that one, but we drew against Dorking last season, so hope it doesn't follow suit. Although eagle-eyed people might spot that in the 70s we played Tranmere home and away in the first game of consecutive seasons, but one of those was in the League Cup. Mm-hmm. That was when they used to play a few League Cup fixture before, so it was the league fixture. So yeah, the first time for 60 years in essence since we've had the same team on the opening day of the season at all, and it's reverse fixtures as well, the same as the Workington ones. But starts off with Dorking. We've then got AFC Fylde away, our first ever visit to Oxford City on a Tuesday night. And Oldham's a telematch at 12:30. Altrincham's the last Saturday match away from home. And then Hartlepool at home on bank holiday Monday. So Oldham and Hartlepool, two of the fancied sides in there. Dorking's, Stewart's outside bet. Fylde always throw a bit of money at it as well. Who knows about Oxford City? But Dorking, a great first fixture, Daz, because we know they're going to want to come and try and play football, and that suits Chesterfield down to the ground.
Yeah, they'll come... they'll come 3-5-2. You know exactly what you're going to get with them. And they'll have a go. They won't come and park the bus. That's absolutely certain. So I suspect it might be a 4-2 or a 5-3 or something, which would be a nice start to the season, wouldn't it? No, I'm sure the club are... I mean, one of the other things we didn't mentioned particularly was the support that we've had at the pre-season games. Absolutely yeah. Staggering. So, you know, if that continues into the league campaign, I'm sure the board will be delighted.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. 2 9,000s and was it 6,000 on against Derby?
Yeah.
24,000 people through the Turnstile before a ball in anger is kicked. Absolutely unbelievable. So, yeah, let's hope we pack the place for Dorking Wanderers. And, of course, you know, we're not going to be relying on 4,000 people coming down the A61 from Sheffield in that game, are we?
No.
But looking at Dorking, they've signed a guy called Harrison Mail from Worthing. They've also signed Tony Craig, who was on loan last season. He's a youngster at 38, probably as fit as a butcher's dog. so yeah, he's not a new face, but he's a new one. They've signed a guy called Jack Saunders from the academy. Callum Backhurst is a goalkeeper, I think. And a guy called Jevon Dyer, a young right winger. So you know they've not really changed their side an awful lot. They brought some youngsters in, and Harrison Mail is the main one, 22 year old. So they're not going to be very much different, Stu, from last season.
No, as Daryl says, you know what their philosophy is, and you know that they're going to come out and try and take a full part in a game of football, which, and as I'm sure we all agree, is right up Paul Cook's street, really. You know, just what you want your opponents to come and do here is to come and try and play their way to a win, because if we're playing well on our day, we're probably better than anybody on our day, and we can go and, you know, do to them what they want to do to us. It's an ideal start, and looking forward to it. Should be a good game.
They brought some real experience back towards the end of the season when they were looking like going down. Jason Pryor, the centre forward who'd scored the goals that got them promoted the previous year and had gone because he didn't want the travelling of National League. They managed to coax him back, I think, from Havant and one or two others. And I think the other guy that scored a lot of goals from Rutherford got an ACL August, September time, so didn't play last season. But I think he'll be back in harness. So I think with the changes that they made to keep them up towards the end of last season, these few additions now, and of course changing going to this hybrid sort of full time model, it'll be interesting to see how they go this time.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting if Alfie Rutherford is fit again, because him and Dobber on the same park, there's bound to be some sparks. No question about that. Rutherford, people may remember, played for Havant and Waterlooville in the game when we scored a last gasp penalty to really ease the relegation problem in, what will it be, 1920, that'll have been, won't it? Scott Bowden, I think, scored a last gasp penalty, and Alfie Rutherford was at Havant Waterlooville there, and I think wanted to fight anybody that went anywhere near him. And Mike Dobber is not the biggest fella in the world as well.
No.
So Dorking, then filed away, Paul, and Chesterfield seemed to have... seem to do pretty well when they've been there before. You know, they're bound to take a lot of supporters this time, yeah, with the enthusiasm that's there and the fact that it's a summer weekend and it's around the down the road from Blackpool and everything.
Yeah,
yeah, there's one of those potential that there might be as many of us as them.
Well, yeah, I don't know what the initial reports were, but it's something like 1,200 tickets made available, but I'm estimating that it probably could be more than that, you know, if you can get yourself in there. But their ground's changed a little bit since Chesterfield were there last time, and they've made a covered stand opposite on the left-hand side from the main stand now, so it's sort of in a bit of a bowl, so it's all covered all the way around now, so apart from the big main stand. But, I mean, AFC filed it. Not too sure how they'll fit in this season. Not expecting them to be up there, kind of mid-table, I would think. But I think they've probably got enough quality not to go down. So, so yeah. But it's always an interesting visit when Chesterfield go there. So, it's a good away game to start with, I think, and get that one sort of done and dusted pretty quickly.
Yeah, and their signings, they've signed a guy called Kieran Glynn from Scarborough, academy player Taylor O'Kane, Theo Richardson, who's goalkeeper at Buxton, ex-Man United youngster, 29-year-old right-winger John Utsabasi, ex-Chorley, so just moved down the road from National League North, Gold Omotayo, who played for...
Kings Lynn,
remember him quite a bit. And a guy called Owen Evans, who I think is their version of Jeff King, is described by Joe Dart in his summary as an attacking defender. he's ex-Gloucester City. They had a team. We've never signed anybody from there, have we? Yeah, they've not signed anybody from a high level.
No.
So interesting to see how they nip in. Do you expect anything from Fylde really does this season?
They'll no doubt throw a few bob at it, won't they? I think they'll be competitive. Middle of the table. I don't think anything more than that. They won
the middle of the table already with your
Well, it always is, isn't it, in the National League? In fairness. There's never a lot between sort of the four that go down and the top four. I can't see them putting in a serious challenge for the playoffs, but I don't think they'll be in any bother.
Now, what about Oxford City? Will they be in some bother? They've their three signings to date. They've signed a goalkeeper on loan from Ebbsfleet. They've signed a fullback from St Albans City. And they've signed a winger from Dartford. So, are they one of those that are expecting, well, let's give the players that got us here a chance, and let's not try and bankrupt the club? Is that the tactic, do you think, Darryl?
Yeah, I suspect it is. I don't think there's an awful lot of money chucking around down at Oxford City. The other thing is that they'll be playing on the fact, like quite one or two teams that come up, that they've got the home advantage, they'll hope, with the plastic pitch and everything, you know, brings them a lot of points. And can they pick up enough away from home to keep them out of trouble is probably what they're looking at. Looking at the signings you've just mentioned, there's nothing there that would stand out to suggest that they're going to try and mount anything other than a rearguard action, does it? So I know they managed to re-sign a lot of the squad that were out of contract. And that's probably out of necessity rather than anything else. And as you say, you know, at least give the lads a chance who got them up. So, I suspect they might have a tough time, but they'll be competitive at home, I think. I watched their playoff game. The playoff final they played at, and they look quite handy. So,
we've got Alfie Potter plays for them,
yeah,
who always is a right pain in the neck against us. Great little player, little diminutive midfielder who always has his best game of the season against Chesterfield. But out of interest, if you watch them, you'll probably know the answer to this. I only knew when I looked for this podcast who the manager of Oxford City is.
I'm sadly not able to remember that, Philip, so you'll have to enlighten me.
Paul's yawning, so he can't remember. Paul's always got stuff written down in front of him. But nobody seems to know.
Not that one. No.
Well, I can officially tell you that it's somebody who scored on my honeymoon.
Oh, hang on.
As well as Jenkins. Ross Jenkins.
I'm now going to put an 18 rating on this now.
Yeah. Ross Jenkins, ex Watford. And I took my nearest and dearest Sylvia on our honeymoon to Watford 2, Chesterfield 0 on March 3rd, 1979. And Luther Blissett scored the other goal. Ah. Graham Taylor, of course, was manager of Watford there.
Yeah.
So that,
tall, lanky centre forward, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was a big lad. No question. So, yeah, Ross Jenkins, I didn't know he was there. I've just literally had a look in preparation of
the other really, thing they haven't got is the lad who was always, I think he was a product of Chelsea and was always deemed to be the next superstar midfielder, McEachran. You remember the
lad? Oh yeah, McEachran.
Chelsea. Jody.
Yeah,
who went on that. Yeah, Zach McEachran, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's his brother that they've got running the midfield, and he looked quite a tidy player. So, yeah.
Oh, right, yeah, there you go.
I'm going to have to be tested. I'm going to try and be tested and not say Oxford United.
Yeah. Well, we've had all sorts of... Dorking and Woking was a big problem. for quite a lot, you know, in the Ing Derby players, you know, the teams. Well, I'm just looking at Oxford City's honours in 1921. They won the Tournoi de Pac de Stade Francais in 1921. Mm. There you go. And the FA Amateur Cup in 1906.
Yeah, big old amateur team, weren't they, for many years?
Been around an awful long time, yeah. So,
Played Oxford United in professional? Or, no, they wouldn't have been professional, but were they?
No,
probably just friendlies. Well, friendlies, weren't they?
Oxford only came into the league in 60, didn't they? So
they could have played Headington United, couldn't they?
Previous life.
Worth a look on that. And then, of course, not surprisingly, an early television game, Paul Oldham at home. You know, we've talked about those being serious rivals. You know, it came as no surprise when a bit of TNT put under that one. And, you know, so that'll be the first Chesterfield game against one of the big hitters. So that there's a lot resting on that in terms of bragging rights.
Yeah, you could say that's a sort of first major test of this. I know the opening day game is always a test, isn't it? But you'd say that's probably going to be the one you'd penciled in straight away as in, ooh, that could be a cracker of a game. And yeah, naturally, they've brought the kickoff forward. I'm sure the police are absolutely delighted about that, actually, so that they've done that.
Well, of course, one of the things is that it's only 800 away fans now, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the Oldham don't sell out. Weirdly, they don't sell out the North Stand ever. Every time they've been, they've never sold out their full allocation, which is strange for a club of reasonable size to Chesterfield, you know. So, but then again, Chesterfield can't sell out their allocation at Boundary Park because it's massive their away end, isn't it? So,
but of course, all the time that we've been on Whitmore, Oldham have had unpopular ownership.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's only now that the guy who's in charge who does all the cementing himself, all the concrete in himself, has has completely transformed the feel of the club. They were slipping away. They felt like they were slipping away.
Yeah.
You know, there was talk 12 months ago, was it, that they were not going to open a brand new stand because it was too expensive to open. That's only a year ago or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
They brought 1,306 last year, Oldham.
Yeah.
It's a bit more than the two sections in E, isn't it? But obviously
yeah,
not.
But, yes, it is. And, you know, the new owner was there. Then I know that because I spoke to him at the game. So, well, in fact, he was there early on in the season when we were 1-0 at their place, wasn't he?
I didn't realize he was on Survivor with Bear Grylls.
What?
Frank Rothwell.
I didn't realize Bear Grylls did a I didn't realise Bear Grylls did a program called Survivor.
Look it up on YouTube. Frank Rothwell, Survivor. He won it, I think.
I'm not surprised Bear Grylls evidently did an episode of Survivor in Oldham.
No, he went. Yeah, he went. Yeah, I will reverse that. It was on an island somewhere.
They did. Oh, I see.
Yeah. Bear Grylls in Oldham would be an exceptional program.
Yeah,
look for, to look for wildlife, I'm sure.
Wild pies.
Yeah, reverse that. It's on an island somewhere. So, weird. Absolutely weird. He's absolutely bonkers, isn't he?
But he's a very pleasant bonkers.
An eccentric.
I had 4 or 5 minutes conversation with him, and it was a thoroughly pleasant 4 or 5 minutes conversation I had with him. It was just by chance, he was just walking around having a look at the facilities just as I was walking past. And we stopped and had a chat, and he was absolutely waxing lyrical about all the facilities at Chesterfield. He was taken with what he saw. Then ulti away, again, we won there last season, I think, before we nearly got locked in the press box or thrown out by a security man, me and Josh Marsh. But altering of how many players they've signed, 9 players. So again, it's one of those that you're not really quite sure what they're going to be. Like they're one of these they're full time, I think, now, aren't they? They're full time.
Yeah, only second year. I don't think they've had a great preseason, Phil. Looking at the results, I don't think they have.
No. But they've signed Dear Angus, who's always a handful up front, isn't he? He played for Ian Everett at Barrow, I think, didn't he? Mm. And Joey Jones was at Solihull last season. Chris Conn-Clark, who's a young player who's pretty good. And then player who played, was it our first home game last season against Aldershot on a Tuesday night? Was that the first home game? It was certainly one of the very early home games that I did the commentary with. Akwasi Asante. He couldn't stop tittering about their player called Justin Amaluza.
Yeah.
And so, well, for a footballer, you just don't want to be called Amaluza. Well, Altrincham have signed him. they've got Justin Donowa, who was at Solihull as well. George Wilson, who probably played against us last season for Colville. So, played in Colville's run, played in the game at Charlton Athletic as well. And he signed Ethan Ross, who's goalkeeper from Stockport. So you look at those and think, they're not bad signings for a club like Altrincham. Mm. They've certainly not weakened, it won't have weakened their squad, those signings, some decent ones.
No. No, you would think again that they might be top half, and if all clicks, might be pushing for a playoff place. They're clearly having a bit of a go, aren't they?
Yeah, they had a good lad last season. What was his name? Ryan somebody, Colclough. He's moved, hasn't he? And then Bank Holiday Monday, Hartlepool. I can't quite weigh up what Hartlepool will do this season, because they had a remarkable year under Challoner and were a terrific side. I mean, we couldn't lay a boot on them, could we? They were far, far, far superior. Both matches, home and away, that season. But they've obviously fallen back since then, since Challoner went to Stockport. And we'll just have a quick look at Hartlepool signings. Let's have a look. I can't quite find them on the list.
But Askey's such a good manager, isn't he?
At this level, very, very good. Yeah.
They've got a 19-year-old centre-back, Kieran Burton, who came from, he was a Barnsley youth. Joel Dixon, keeper from Bolton. Kieran Wallace, Mansfield Town. We mentioned him earlier on, didn't we? Another goalkeeper, Paul Jameson, 30, from Harrogate. Of course, Manny Disaruve, who knows how to score a key goal in a key match in this division. Chris Ray from Southend. Striker who doesn't score too often. Manny Onariasa, who was at Dagenham last year, decent player, I like him. And a lad called Anthony Mancini, who was at Stanley last season. So again, nothing remarkable there, but nothing that's dreadful either. So they're going to be. I think that they'll not match Paul their bookies' expectations.
Yeah, I think they'll be sort of pushing there or thereabouts. You know, they'll be a good side. Probably, yeah. I'd say they're going to be top six, maybe.
You reckon?
But I don't know whether they've still got any hang-ups from last year, because it takes a lot when you get relegated out of that to kind of shake that thing off, doesn't it, really? I think you've got to have an exceptional season, yeah, or make some really key signings or keep the best players out of that squad. So that's the difference. If they can stay injury-free and make a good start, then they could probably reach sixth. But it depends, like I say, on many other factors that they've got. But purely, I don't say this in top six, purely because they've got John Askey as manager. That's
yeah,
why.
Yeah.
So I really rate him as a boss. So, you know, he's completely done it at that level. So.
Well, he was badly dealt a bad blow at, where was it? He was
York.
York, mm-hmm. Because the sack from York, yeah, that was it. Yeah, mm-hmm, that's right. And that created a lot of boardroom pressure, didn't it?
Yeah.
So that's right. But I think Oldham and Woking will be our two closest rivals. That's my prediction for top three: Chesterfield, Oldham, and Woking. I think Eastleigh will be there or thereabouts. Then I think there might be a big mid-table. I think the team going into the final match of the season in 19th place might still have a chance of the playoffs by the end of the day.
Yeah, well,
it's going to be a real big belly in the middle. And I think Oxford City will struggle. I genuinely think Rochdale might struggle, you know, daft as it sounds. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you get on a bit of a downer, we'll see. Southend will struggle if they play. No question about that. You the usual suspects, the Wealdstones and that, who are brilliant at just staying above water. I think the Wealdstones and Maidenheads and Aldershot will struggle as well. But hey, who knows? Who knows? We've not really talked about Danny Rowe and Kwasi Asante. We've talked about all the players who are fit.
Mm.
Oh, by the way, Ollie Palmer was due to have started training properly again this week. But Tyra Williams has got the shirt at the moment. And, you know, if he's a couple of weeks off the pace, Palmer, it's unlikely he'll start against Dorking. But we've not talked about Kwasi Asante, who, off air, we were talking, Daz, I think he's had a groin operation that could potentially clear up what's been giving him a few problems for a while. And Danny Rowe's back in training.
Yeah.
Are we likely to see those incorporated into a first team squad, or do you think Paul Cook will still be trying to move them on?
To be honest, I think the ship sailed with them both. If we can move them out, I suspect he would like to, which would again release some funds. Even if we couldn't get teams to pick up all their wages, if you could get them to pick up a chunk of them, it would help, wouldn't it? And realistically, now he's signed. I mean, we didn't mention young Curtis, did we? He's been added to the fold. As I say, I still think we'll go out and pick up another forward. Is that really leaving those two behind Quigley, Grigg, Curtis and AN other? It's leaving them fifth and sixth on the pecking order. So my gut feeling is we've probably seen the last of them in a blue shirt, but you never know.
Yeah, well, as Sandy, if he does shake off the injury, he's always one, because he did okay in that left centre mid, left attacking mid position, didn't he? When he when he came there a few times ago. But yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a long way back for those guys. No question about it. Kieran Dyer, Stuart, has become a formal part of the backroom squad as well now. So with Gary Roberts and Danny Webb, there's plenty of strength there. Very different to the days of the one man and his bucket.
Well, indeed, yes. And he's obviously trusted, you know, from the moment he steps in, because he's known to both Paul Cook and Gary Roberts from Ipswich. I believe the Ipswich forward was Harley Curtis was a player that he has championed and we brought in and signed, you know. So there was talk of he was actually seen in the crowd later on, but there was talk of him being away scouting or something during one earlier game that we'd played. I think it might have been the Sheffield Wednesday game, but he was spotted sort of back up in the crowd doing that higher up observational sort of role that clubs sometimes have people doing. He's an experienced player, isn't he? You know, he's a player with some kind of significant national profile in the game. So, you know, players who are coming along, especially and just trying to make their first steps in the game, will be able to look to someone like him, you know, for wisdom and experience, irrespective of whatever particular kind of technical ability he has as a coach, you know. And it's good. It might give us a sort of an active coaching team that is one larger than most of the other National League sides. I did try and have a look at that during the close season. Most seem to have three and we now have four. I don't think that's obscenely overstaffed or anything for a team with our resources, you know.
Should have seen Wrexham.
If it helped to bring us success, you know.
My word.
So much the better.
I think in his interview, Paul, Kieran Dyer said one of the things he wanted to do was try and bring on players individually as well. Mm. So, yeah, when you've got somebody who's got as many England caps as Kieran Dyer's got, you know, any player's going to listen to it. Particularly somebody like him who's come through injury and personal difficulties over the time and bounced back positively. Mm. They're going to listen to him, Paul, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they've just got to read his book, haven't they, about that. So, he talks about that in detail. So, but if you're not listening to the likes of Kieran Dyer, then you're really not going to be listening to anybody, are you? So, you know, players like Dobra, Bailey Hobson. I bet Bailey Hobson can't believe the luck that he's got. He's got Danny Webb, an experienced National League player and coach now. He's got, you can fall back on for him. Gary Roberts, what a player and what a career he's had. Paul Cook, you know, as your sort of mentor there, as your manager. My word, I mean, you know, just around the dressing room with the experience that they've got. Will Griggs played just about 500 games, hasn't he, or something like that. So, you know, incredible amount of experience for him. So, yeah, there's lots to delve into in the coaching staff. And, you know, if Chesterfield don't do it this season, what more can they do? You know, in many respects.
And we mentioned the interview with Kieran Dyer there, Daz, but listening to Bailey Hobson's interview, I can rarely think of anybody who clearly wanted to be at a place more than Bailey Hobson did that day. And Will Griggs' interview as well clearly made it that Paul Cook was not just massive, but the reason.
Yeah. Absolutely. Young Hobson was so refreshing, wasn't he? I mean, he was bursting with excitement. He was like a kid on Christmas morning. He couldn't believe where he was and how he progressed. And just to see the enthusiasm in him. And he plays that way too, doesn't he? You know, he's all action. He's totally committed. He's obviously got a lot to learn, but my word, you can't doubt his enthusiasm and his desire and his commitment. And if you've got those,
he's got a lot of the strengths, i.e. the willingness to run straight into the heart with the ball that Tim Akinola had. But he just seems to be a little bit stronger than Tim Akinola.
Yeah. He's very robust. He's well built, isn't he? Travels decently over the ground. I wouldn't say he's a flyer, but he travels decently over the ground and carries the ball. And he looked to have a shot once or twice, which is obviously, as we'd seen on the scant videos that were about of him at Alfred, and he likes to have a pop and score a few goals. So, yeah, he might just be a good wild card coming off the bench, I think. It's good to see. Will Grigg, I don't think that was any surprise, really. I think if Paul Cook hadn't have been here, Will Grigg wouldn't have been here either. But he knows how Cookie plays. It obviously played to his strengths when they were together before. And the thing I like about Grigg, he hasn't scored lots of goals, but the ones he's had have been clinical finishes. And even in the the Derby and Wednesday and United games, the half chances he had, it was one touch and bang on target each time. It was not fluff your shot, miscontrol it, you know, blaze it high into the Tesco's car park. So yeah, I can see him if he can keep fit, and I'll touch whatever wood's within touching distance. I can see him getting 35, 40 this year.
Mm. Well, what's a natural finisher, Stuart? But, you know, of a lower division player, bearing in mind this is the lowest he's ever played, Will Grigg does look like one, doesn't he? You know, people always used to say Owen Doyle was a natural finisher, but he wasn't. Yeah. He just converted quite a few of the zillions of chances that Gary Roberts and co created in 13, 14, and 14, 15. Whereas Will Grigg is just there, you know, and he's finishing. He does look so different to the players who've scored quite a few goals for us in recent times. He's certainly no Craig Davis.
No.
Certainly no Jack Lester. But he is just annoying for opposition because he's always in the right place.
Yeah, you can't underestimate the value of somebody who can put a ball in the net from 2 yards, can you? And, you know, it cost us on a number of occasions last season not having anyone like that. And as long as we can get the service right, so long as the final ball is right, you know, to him in the box, then he will score goals, you know, and he'll get a good ratio of goals to chances that he's presented with. It's just, you know, have we got the quality? And I'm sure with people like Colclough and Dobra and even all the way back to the fullbacks with people like Jeff King, we've got the quality to be able to get good service to him. And I think on that basis alone, he's going to be scoring a lot of goals for us next season.
We've got sort of 70 minutes into the podcast, Paul, and we're not mentioning Liam Mandeville, who was involved with more individual goals than any other player in terms of goals scored and assists. He's probably been the quietest of the big players in pre-season, but I don't think that's a worry, is it? Is it?
No, I don't think so. He bagged two on the first two goals against Matlock, and since then he's been quieter. I know they've rotated the role for him playing left in the middle and the right, just to give them some options over the course. I don't think so. I wouldn't say that. I mean, the three games at home, Colclough didn't really stand out as a you know, one of the players that you think always had a great sort of pre-season. But I know he scored on Saturday. I wasn't there on Saturday.
It was whiz-bang at Accrington. He was on.
So there we go. So he was he was kind of resting for it, wasn't he? So, you know, he was excellent against Matlock, you know. But then again, they were really clinical. But I'm, you know, clutching at straws that you don't read in too much into that scenario. They're all chomping at the bit to try and get into that first 11 on against Dorking. That's when it's key.
Yes.
Yeah, you said something earlier where you didn't think Grigg was a Jack Lester. Oh, I see a lot of Jack Lester in Grigg. The low centre of gravity, does his work primarily in the box. All about first touch and getting the half yard away from people. I think there's quite a lot of Jack in him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good point. Well made. But of course, Jack was never a striker until he came to Chesterfield. He was always a sort of an attacking midfielder, wasn't he? Really?
Yeah, number 10 or whatever.
Number 10 and learnt his trade and did remarkably well. Probably scored more goals for Chesterfield than he did for the rest of his career added up together. I've not checked that, but I bet it's not far off.
Yeah.
So no question about that. We talked about the big crowds, the friendlies, and of course one of them was Drew Talbot testimonial, which of course, I've sort of got a slightly biased view, but to sell over 9,000 tickets, Stuart, in a testimonial, it's the numero uno in the history of the club, and I know part of that was just hitting Sheffield Wednesday at the right time as well. Let's not pretend it wasn't. And I think they brought twice as many supporters as they would have done if they'd have won the league with five games to go, like they were threatening to do at one stage. Yeah. I think the fact that they were out of it, then back in it, and then last minute extra time has brought about this level of excitement that if they'd have won the title with four games remaining, it was, we should have won that anyway. Wow. So, that added to the excitement. Mm. But what a great day for Drew, and what a great servant he's been for the club.
It was, wasn't it? It was 4,000 people from a team that you last played for, 10 years previously or whenever it was. I'm sure they all came out of appreciation for Tom from Chesterfield as well for his rallying phone call on the day before the...
said I needed Sheffield Wednesday any good.
Yeah.
Tom from Chesterfield, who later revealed his name was John.
Yeah,
because somebody on Radio Sheffield didn't hear him right the first time he rang. No, it was a great day, wasn't it? And very well deserved, it's slightly peculiar in that there'd been a couple of years, or perhaps a few more than that now, between the end of Drew's playing career and the actual game itself. I think many of the others would have got their testimonial game in their last season, but even so, and that would be a reason why fewer people came, wouldn't it? But no, 9,000, as you say, a record crowd for an individual player's testimonial match for Chesterfield player. Yeah, it's fantastic, and a really nice day for a player who deserves it.
Yeah, and a great reception for the Sheffield Wednesday supporters. And Drew's a little bit like Ernie in that he doesn't get it. He doesn't get all the adulation. He's just turned up, done his job to the best of his ability. The thing is, he did his job to the best of his ability every time he crossed the white line, Dad. That's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very humble, isn't he? He's very humble.
Yeah. I think that it was him and Danny Whittaker that when we went up in the first season at the Pro-X Stadium, as it was. I think it was him and Danny that were the last people off the pitch signing autographs by a country mile at the end of that day. Which shows you the sort of person he is.
That'll be the cheapest fixture that Sheffield Wednesday fans can go to all season.
Oh my God!
Having raised their attendances.
One or two did point out the fact that maybe that's because it's whatever pound notes it is for the match. But we're obviously delighted that they accepted the fixture, and Sheffield Wednesday called the shots to a lot of it. They were the people who said they wanted it to be an absolute proper pre-season workout match, a proper game. So there was never any doubt. So some of the froth that you might build up to a testimonial, we deliberately didn't do because we were. And Wednesday, ironically, also wanted it to be a £10 fixture. So, we were initially looking at charging more than that, but they wanted that, and it worked well. We've got no problems with it all because it was a terrific day, and it's a day you'll remember as much as anything. So, I'll be seeing Drew in a day or two. This will have gone out after that at the launch of his bottled beer, and I have to say the
very nice.
Drew did a brilliant job. It was very very nice. The Brew Talbot, and it's quite funny on the name. Chris Radford from the brewery and myself were trying to think of something when we first thought of the concept back in February time, and we couldn't think of anything. So we don't need to know now. And anyway. I just woke up in the middle of one night and I thought, right, okay, we need to nail this name now. It's getting to time for a name. And I'm going, Drew. Oh, that likes Brew. So it was the simplest name ever, but the most effective name ever. But when the combined brains of the two of us were actually trying to think of it, it didn't. We just couldn't come up with anything. We were all sorts of, and then it was the most obvious. But it was a nice beer, or is a nice beer. If you've not had a chance to get one, nip down Brampton Brewery and get some of the bottles.
I think it was the tagline, Phil, that did it for me.
Yes,
Phil, it was the tagline.
Robust with a hint of ginger.
Yeah.
And Chris had never brewed a beer with ginger before, and they had to trial several different approaches and do all the sampling every day for ages. It was terrible work, apparently.
Yeah, it was terrible work.
And they ended up infused the ginger into it, like a tea bag type of thing. They put it in a vessel with perforations in and infused it into the. Because I'd wanted a little bit of ginger in, and when I'd asked Chris about that, and then I went and read the reviews of some beers with ginger in, they were all awful. I think I've given him an impossible task here. But he's come up with a great one, and you can tell there's a little bit of ginger in there, but it's not overpowering. So we're all really pleased, with it. So there we go. Another just a date for the diary: Thursday the 3rd of August, the next supporters forum drop in because of holidays and everything. We didn't have one in July, and if you're listening and you arrange any away transport for any games, we'd love you to come along because we're going to concentrate on away travel as much as anything. We'll talk about all the other usual stuff as well, but certainly top of the agenda will be away fans, because we've now got the Bridge Inn, who is now the Barrel Inn Travel Club. The Bridge Inn that was the Bridge Inn Travel Club is now the Bridge Inn Travel Club, which is not the Barrel Bridge Inn Travel Club. And I know certainly for File, the Britannia at Tupton is taking a bus to Fylde that's already full. I saw Carl at Accrington the other day, and he says it's full. Dean Chaplin runs buses on quite a basis. Sure. There's no excuse for not getting there.
Well, Haslam, yeah. I think they're doing one as well, I think. Shoulder and Button, Haslam. So,
they get a lot of fans in there. Coming back from matches, often see lots and lots of town fans in there on a Saturday night after an away game. So yeah, it's terrific that the crowds at home last season were great. The crowds away will be great. And if Chester will do start off well, you just wonder how many they're going to take to the likes of Altrincham and some of the more local games, Halifax and everything like that. It'll be quite interesting, won't it? So anything that we want to add, fellas?
August the 4th, Friday, is the Memorial Garden. Service isn't quite the word, but there's a bit of a commemoration before the start of every season, isn't there?
Yeah.
Where we remember the players we've lost over the previous season and all of that. That's always nice...
7 o'clock, I think. 7 o'clock, yeah. Is it
7? Yeah. It's always a nice sort of reflective thing to go and attend, I find, on the season's eve, So that'll be happening August the 4th, 7 o'clock, at the Memorial Garden.
And, of course, there'll be a new man on the Wall of Fame with Jerry Clark.
Yeah.
Passed away since the event last year. Good point, Stu. I'd forgotten about that. Paul, anything?
No, we're going to try and meet as often as we can, more regular than last season. We'll have plenty to discuss, I'm pretty certain. Full credit to the supporters for notching up 40% of the capacity to even turn up at week in, week out. I think that's a remarkable number, with, I'm sure, many more to come as well. As the football goes on, half season tickets, etc. The SMH Group Stadium is the place to be, isn't it? Little nod to the new name of the ground.
Mm-hmm. I met one of the principals at Drew's testimonial, and Drew Talbot. We were looking for one more sponsor, and Drew's wife Charlotte said, Drew's a client of SMH, the new people, because we weren't wanting to tread on any of the club's ground. We were fishing in a new pond. And anyway, they filled the gap of the last sponsor. And I was talking to one of the principals, and he said, I'm quite pally with Drew, known him for some considerable time. And it's quite pally that he was the guy that gave him a lift back from Wembley after one of the JPT finals. So I think he's a little bit more than a bit pally, So they seem to be a real good fit. From what I've seen of the people at the business, they seem to be a real good fit. So they're looking forward to it, no question about it. And obviously it'll give exposure to them. They've got they've got 10 or 11 branches around the area, but there's one on Saltergate, And I think people didn't know the name SMH because they've always gone under the name of Sutton, McGrath and something else, isn't it? It was the right. full name of the S and the M and the H, and that I think confused a few people. But you know, the new branding is there, and it'll be the signage will be up soon. I think it's been delayed somewhere before it came, but it'll not be long before it's up. Daz?
Yeah, the only thing that struck me when I was looking at the fixtures is between kickoff on the 5th and the end of September, we've 13 league games to fit in.
Yeah, they don't like night matches in November, December, no. January, February, March, do they?
No, and
although you end up with loads of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Which just means you've really got to hit the ground running. And you know, by that time we need to have accumulated a lot of points by the end of September to give yourself that platform to build on through the long dark winter days and nights. And I just think it's so crucial that we get off to a good start, because you can then build in the odd blip along the way. If we start off iffily and we're suddenly chasing, then you've got to put together a colossal run at some point to pull it back. And I would rather be the hare in this instance, I think. This 13 games right up front, absolutely critical.
Could you take 37 points out of them 13 games?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well, I mean, we were the hare last year until the 1st of October.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there wasn't a great deal wrong that we could have done at the start last year.
No.
So, but we had that mad week, and that's the one that cost us. It wasn't necessarily a bad run.
But equally, you're not going to get a team like Wrexham who win 20 games or whatever.
No.
They won't,
are you? We had the mad week and then the 9 game without a win, didn't we?
I'm gonna ask you for two things. Go on, Paul.
Sorry, the 3 game run cost us top spot and the 9 game run very nearly cost us the playoffs. So yeah. You know.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you just a few questions. The first ones are simple and I don't want any discussion, I just want yes, no's, whatever.
Right.
Promotion, championship. It can be yes, 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 no. So or no, no. So Archester will go and get promoted. Stuart?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Daryl?
Yes.
Phil? Yes. Are they going to be champions, Stuart?
Yes, with the personal proviso that I don't mind if we're back in the playoffs, because we'll go and do it this year if we happen to be. But yes.
So that's Stuart's answer to nothing other than yes or no.
Well, I said yes. Yes, but you know, if it happens that it's no, well,
it's still on with it now. Mute him. Paul, yes or no, champions?
Yes.
Daz?
Yes.
Bearing in mind your predictions, I wish you'd have said no.
Exactly.
I'll say yes.
That's why I hesitated. Yes.
Yeah. And then the real test, because this will go out on Monday, score at Bristol Rovers. I'll start that with, I'm going to say 1-1. 1-1.
Hang on, 0-0.
Oh, 0-0 for Paul?
Yeah.
Your person your lips, Daz?
2-1 to the Spirites.
2-1 to the Spirites. And Stuart, bearing in mind that Chesterfield have never won a league game away at Bristol Rovers, they've only won once in the League Cup in 3,000 years.
Since it's not a league game, we ought to go for an away win, but I'm going to say 2-2, mainly because you said 1-1.
Yeah, 1-1 win, 0-0, 1-1, 2-2, and a 2-1 win for Daryl. So, a multiple of grounds, because they've played all over the place, Eastville and Bath and Memorial Ground and all sorts of places. Only ever won League Cup victory at it was Eastville, wasn't it, back in the early
60s. Yeah, yeah.
Time. So, there you go, and every other one. Well, including the last ever game at Eastville, of course. We played in.
That's on YouTube, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's on YouTube somewhere.
All right, okay. The whole game?
I don't know about that. I'm not sure about that.
It's on
YouTube, yeah.
There you go. Well, thank you very much, Paul, for making sure everything comes together and
I'll see you all at Oxford. I'm on holiday now, so I'll see you all in Oxford.
All right.
Okay, so Paul Fisher, Stuart Basson, Daryl Carpenter, me, Phil Tooley, thanks. And as Paul promised, we'll be back sooner rather than later.
In the still of the night, at dawn's early light, in fact, all day through, we'll be a spy right. This is that we recite, we love and despise the ups and the downs, because we're a spy right. But now you can hear all the things you hold dear, because this podcast for you is called The Sky Is Blue. So come on in too, where everything's blue, and hear our review, because you're a
And if you like this podcast, then don't forget to subscribe. Please rate and review us on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, and many of your favorite podcast providers.